This is an archive radio show from 209 Radio, 105 FM in Cambridge. 209 is a voluntary radio station and a registered charity. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please go to justgiving.com/209radio and donate securely online. Or for other options, please call 01223 488 418. Thank you for your support.
Nothing is harder to bear than the unstilled desires of those one loves most. Except one's own.
Who are you?
Bonjour. Je suis Néné.
To begin with, can you say something about the plot of the film?
It concerns a screenplay writer with a deadline, and he has terrible writer's block. He doesn't really quite know why he should get out of bed in the morning, except that he's got a family to feed and an actress wife who's enslaved to her soap, and he is writing the film that she will perform in, which will rescue her from his fate worse than death. He is reduced to writing about himself in order to break out of this block, and in order to write about himself, he has to live the story that he has imagined, and in order to do that, he has to invite into his house precisely the person he needs to complete the cast list, and that is Nene, yes, whom he invites from Paris to become an au pair to look after the children while Phoebe, his wife, revs up for the Christmas season, and he tries desperately to deliver this script.
Okay, well, the film starts by saying that desires are like God's embracing, but only exist when captured. Is Ralph, or you yourself, I can't help conflating the two, saying that for most people desires have less meaning than they do for those able to articulate them? It's the idea that they only exist once they're captured.
Yes.
I suppose I must get away from this idea that you are Ralph.
I don't mind that at all. Mm. I think it's sort of in a way quite a fertile confusion. Because I did write very definitely from the first person point of view. I have huge frustration at the anonymity of generic film, and I do feel that filmmakers today should bring a greater degree of identification and a rather louder personal voice to what they're writing. So I don't have any trouble with that conflation, even though, as I say, it's not an autobiographical story. I do think that desires are more sharply lived and experienced when they are captured in some kind of projected form, be it in writing, in images, in film, as Ralph says right at the very start. And I think Ralph lives far more intensively in his mind than in his body, which is one reason why he finds it hard to finish the film. That may be a paradox, possibly it should make it more easy for him to finish the film, but there also comes the point, I think, where he realises that without living his story, he is not going to be able to realise what it is. So in a way, to answer your point both ways, on the one hand, yes, they are more vivid, our desires, and they are more sharply lived when captured in some kind of reflection, in some kind of creative mirror. But on the other hand, I do believe quite strongly that if you live nothing, you will have nothing to reflect. So it also has to do with the courage to live. And in some ways, I think Ralph, though exceedingly blocked and very claustrophobized, is a very courageous character, because he does push through the story. Mm. And he does get there in the end. And I think we know by the end of the film that the film has been made.
She arrived on the night train. You were asleep.
What did you say?
You're rehearsing. I've got a deadline. We need childcare.
What are you writing anyway?
Your script. They need it by Christmas.
What can I read?
Only if you're good. She's a national disaster. She needs a film. This one.
This personage is to au pair?
Could be.
You write me before you meet me?
And what am I paying her for?
Come on then, sack her!
Whatever else it is, I don't think that Desire is a very British film. It is not a Brit flick. I very much wanted to get away from the documentary realist style of recent UK output. I wanted to do something different and return, if you like, to a creative tradition that was based on more on fable, on myth, on intimate observation, on interior spaces.
How did you find Tella Kumahu?
Tella was born in French-speaking West Africa, in Benin, in fact, and has moved between Benin and Côte d'Ivoire, various other parts of West Africa. And I did, to a certain extent, construct the story around the idea that she would be available to perform in it. Tella was one essential element in the entire project.
Filming in a single house, because all the events take place within one very large, but a single house, must have been a nightmare with the crew. How did you manage?
It was quite claustrophobic, but the film, among other things, is about claustrophobia, so we were in the right atmosphere.
Yes.
And at least we didn't have to travel very far from one set to the next.
Yeah.
I mean, in the kitchen, we were actually cooking for 30 at one end while we were filming for 4 or 6 at the other. So it was very, very, very tight indeed.
How long was the shoot, by the way?
The shoot was very, very short. Mm. I'm not going to tell you how short because it's something of a trade secret, but we worked with enormous intensity, very fast, and this was the way I wanted to work, partly because we didn't have the budget to work any longer. I do believe that film allows itself too much space, too much time, too much consideration, far too much money, and that actually just going for what you know you want and moving on when you know you've got it is by far the best thing to do. And my director of photography, Alex Ryle, organised and inspired a crew quite wonderfully. He knew, because we discussed it in great detail in advance, whatever we were going to do next. He had his lighting plan clearly in his mind, and he turned out, I think, a film that looks as though it cost about $5 million for something that cost infinitely less.
Mm. It's your first feature film, isn't it, after theatre and television work?
Yes.
Did you have any problems making the transition?
No. My directing days in television are sufficiently far behind me for me to pretty much reinvent myself, really. And that was facilitated by the fact that, anyway, I've been writing feature films and consulting very extensively, mainly across continental Europe, for other filmmakers, largely, for instance, in the Balkans. I did a stint in Morocco helping filmmakers from the Maghreb and the Marrakesh. So, I mean, particularly interested in non-British film. And my producer, Fiona Howe, and I, through our company Scenario Films, we also run a training programme called Babylon, which is the only pan-European multicultural film training initiative for directors and producers. So if you like, I've actually been working within the feature film milieu for a good 20 years now. Mm. And the fact that it's taken me this long to direct, as you say, my first feature film for cinematic release is a matter of some frustration. And it was that frustration also that led in large part to the creation of Desire, because I desired to make a film that nobody could stop me making.
So how long did the script take to write?
About 2 months.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, this is my problem with long development spans. I think you may gain something with each draft, but there is a terrible tendency in the film world for projects, for scripts to get worse rather than better.
Mm.
And I also feel that of late, the last couple of decades, shall we say, the role of the word in film has been downgraded to a point where it is a tragedy. I mean, film is as much an audio medium as a visual medium, but people very rarely recognise or accept that fact.
So how was he? Did you do it?
I'm just an object.
No, don't say that.
Object of desire.
I'm very sensitive to issues of post-colonialism.
Now, I write my own part.
What's the story? It's a secret.
Nelly is quite passive in her actions, and she's more of a catalyst who elicits desire. Yet she is I think, the pivot of the film. And yet for most of it, we can't tell whether she's a force for good or ill. She refers to herself at one point as an object of desire.
Mm.
So would you say whether she was an obscure object of desire in that her motives are unknowable?
I agree, and I I mean, this almost is the most difficult point about the film, because given the fact she comes from French West Africa into a totally separate culture, there is, and very deliberately, explicitly in the film, a certain jeu du post-colonialisme. There is a post-colonial jest at work within the film, of which we were well, well aware when we were making the film.
Yeah.
I mean, when she says, I'm just an object of desire, it is the moment at which actually she is about to give in, but at the same time, she exerts her sovereign critical intellect sufficiently to challenge Ralph with this, and Ralph comes up with an answer. I mean, he does answer and say, no, it isn't that. And I think an audience is allowed to speculate. What I didn't want to be was politically correct. This is very dangerous terrain.
Yeah.
It's very, very delicate, dangerous terrain. And
it can seem patronising, can't it?
Well, it can seem patronising, but it can also, if you like, elevate the object of desire into a kind of exotic projection surface which bears no relation at all to reality. Not only was I conscious of that danger and commenting on it in the film, but actually, very shortly after that, Nene reveals a backstory which is extremely poignant and suddenly brings her fully present, three-dimensionally, centre screen, and makes us look at her in an entirely different way from then on, and relates her to her presence in this family with a great specificity.
It's interesting that the script is finished on Christmas Day.
Yes.
I wondered if that was symbolic.
I think there is most definitely a spiritual side to the film. There is, I hope, within the film a deliberate counterpoint between what might be held as formal religion against, if you like, unshaped natural spirituality, or if you like, the awareness that we carry in us urges which go beyond the merely possessive. That desire, if you like, has a spiritual side, without which it merely becomes lust, as Ralph most specifically says at one point.
One last question. It all seems to work out in the end, despite the angst and despite Ralph's dangerous game. Are you an optimist about desire?
Oh yes, yeah, totally. And I did not want to go out on a pessimistic note. And people who've seen the film at the private viewing have told me that it should have been a totally closed ending and the family should have reverted to the status quo ante. Well, the penultimate moment is precisely that. But because this is a film about a film, about making a film, I felt entitled to have a different ending as well, and leave it up to the audience which was the correct one, and leave it, you know, to slug it out afterwards, because again, one comment I've had from people who've viewed the film privately is that they did talk about it afterwards longer than the film had lasted. I think that's an excellent ratio, incidentally, because it was Hitchcock, I think, who said that the length of the film should be in direct proportion to the endurance of the human bladder. And I personally don't like films of more than 90 minutes, because it seems to me everything should be sayable in that length of time.
Having said that, I watched it twice.
Yes.
It was a very rich film, and I saw things the second time. So I think it is a film that repays repeated viewings.
I'll watch it again.
I think you should.
Maybe it's for my script.
So what's your part?
The virgin?
Wouldn't be a part for me, would that?
I'd murder for a decent film.
I want him out of here, Phoebe. Dead or alive.
It's a film. A film called Desire.